They're very, very careful on things like this, not to do things that hurt themselves.
China readies a trade war list. It's Tuesday, October 20th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, fight over a flag. Older voters may hold keys to the White House. Fighting fake news, safe schools, and big taste from a micro bakery. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's Commerce Ministry has released some details of its unreliable entities blacklist, which was first announced in May last year. While Beijing announced the new regulations, it has not published the actual list yet. It comes after U.S. President Donald Trump imposed curbs on Huawei and additional tariffs on Chinese goods. In retaliation, China said it would draw up its own list. It targets foreign firms and individuals violating normal market transactions in the country, interrupting deals with Chinese firms, or taking discriminatory measures against Chinese companies. VOA's Adriana Zhang finds out more from William Rench, Scholl Chair and Senior Advisor at the Center for Strategic International Studies, and for 15 years served as President of the National Foreign Trade Council.
They announced some time ago they were going to do this. They haven't put anybody on the list yet, so it doesn't have any practical significance until they do. And I think we just have to wait and see what that means. I mean, if they put big companies that do a lot of business on the list, it will have a significant impact on trade and on the relationship between our two countries. If they just put small companies that are engaged in not very many activities in China on the list, then it probably won't make a lot of difference.
So are you saying that China actually doesn't have a list yet?
Well, they haven't made one public. I'm sure they're trying to think about who would be on it. But in my experience with the Chinese is that they're very, very careful on things like this, not to do things that hurt themselves. They look for things they can do to hurt us, but they don't want to do any damage to their own economy in the process. And the fact is our economies are right now are closely related. And if you're going to go after big American companies that are busy in China, you're going to affect a lot of Chinese workers, and they probably are going to think very hard before they decide to do that.
Why did they wait for so long to say that, hey, we're going to punish American or foreign companies after, so many moves made by American government already?
Well, there could be several different explanations. One could be is they're having trouble figuring out who they can target, where they won't shoot themselves in the foot. And they have a bureaucracy just like we have a bureaucracy. It takes time sometimes to figure out what to do and what actions you want to take, because what's unknown at this point is not only who might be on the list, but what actions they might end up taking. They don't, are they going to ban those companies from importing things? Are they going to ban them from exporting? Are they going to put them out of business? Are they going to subject them to some sort of monitoring requirements? Are they going to impose some extra tax on them? I mean, I don't think we know what actions they've decided to take, much less who they've decided to take them against.
So some experts actually told me that it's just a bluff. Do you agree?
Not really, no. I don't think the Chinese bluff usually. In my experience is they always retaliate, but they find a way to do it that doesn't hurt them. And I think in this particular case, they're probably having some difficulty figuring that out. The things I just described would have a negative impact on the Chinese economy at a time when the Chinese economy already has its difficulties.
Do you think China would wait actually till after the election?
Well, I think that would depend on their judgment about who's going to win. Nobody knows who's going to win, but if you think that Trump is going to be reelected, then there's no point in waiting. If you think that Biden's going to win, then you might decide that it would be better to wait for him to take over, because the tone of the negotiation might be different and the outcome might be different. So, and they might be waiting now just because they don't have a clear picture about that and think that, well, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, it might be more obvious who's going to win and we can decide what to do. They always do something. They try to calibrate what they do to be equivalent to what we've done. So I think they're trying to figure out the magnitude of what we've done. I think there's also the possibility here that and there are signs of this, that they're embarking on their own decoupling path, that Xi Jinping is coming to the conclusion that from his point of view, the Americans are unreliable partners, and that China is better off developing its own technology. That suggests that China is going to move in the direction of some separation from us, not because of what we've done to them, but because of they find it in their own interest to do that. But they recognize that in the short run, that would be very difficult for them, and it would be very expensive, because they rely on us in high-tech sectors for lots of stuff. And so they want to move in that direction, but they don't want to do it so quickly that they end up crippling their own high-tech industries. So they have a lot of things to think about before they take an action.
William Reinsch is the Scholl Chair and Senior Advisor at the Center for Strategic International Studies, speaking with VOA's Adriana Zhang. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thai's embattled prime minister recalls parliament amid protests. Australia's coronavirus hotspot, Victoria State, loosens restrictions. United States warns distressingly high Afghan violence could derail deal with Taliban. Fresh wave of Chinese diplomacy bolsters resistance to U.S. in Southeast Asia. China's economy grows nearly 5% in the third quarter of 2020. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Opposition politicians are urging the Australian government to commandeer the design of the Aboriginal flag if copyright disputes are not resolved. The flag was created almost 50 years ago as part of the Aboriginal lands rights movement. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The top half of the Aboriginal flag is black to symbolise Australia's original inhabitants. The red in the lower half represents the earth, and the circle of yellow in the centre signifies the sun. It was created by Harold Thomas, an Indigenous artist, in 1971. He owns the copyright and has granted exclusive licences to 3 non-Aboriginal companies, which use the design on flags, souvenirs and clothing. These commercial arrangements have been investigated by a parliamentary committee. Opposition Labor Senator Malandiri McCarthy says she's dismayed that sporting and other organisations in Australia have been threatened with legal action for unauthorised use of the flag.
Aboriginal people don't want to be held to ransom for the use of something that has been a symbol of pride and activism over decades.
A Free the Flag campaign has attracted much attention online. It's supported by Nova Peris, a former Australian senator and Olympian.
The fact that the Aboriginal flag has a copyright on it is wrong. The Aboriginal flag is a symbol of our identity and our connection to the land, and we should not be subjected to an individual's decision on when or where we can celebrate our pride.
The Senate inquiry has been weighing up the symbolic power of the Aboriginal flag against an individual's private property rights. It's concluded that the government shouldn't use its constitutional powers to acquire the Aboriginal flag. However, opposition members of the committee have insisted the design should be commandeered if freer access to the flag can't be negotiated by Australia Day in January. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, a small group of prominent democracy activists in Hong Kong, including Joshua Wong, rallied outside the Thai consulate in the Asian financial hub Monday to show solidarity with protesters in Thailand demonstrating against the government and the monarch. Stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us. Public opinion polls indicate slightly more older Americans are supporting Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden than President Donald Trump. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara tells us more.
This senior community in Florida is traditionally a Republican stronghold, but after the Democratic National Convention in August, some residents paraded in support of Joe Biden, saying they have had enough of President Donald Trump.
We want everybody to know that we need to get him out of office.
Polls show Trump is losing support from voters 65 and older, a group he won by 9 percentage points in 2016.
He is losing seniors in many states, often by very substantial margins. That's a result of downplaying the coronavirus pandemic while seniors are the most vulnerable population.
Eager to win back older voters who make up 23% of the 2020 American electorate, on Friday, Trump campaigned in Florida in an event billed protecting American seniors.
I will defend you and I will fight for you with every ounce of energy and conviction that I have.
Trump repeated a promise he made days after his release from hospital due to COVID, saying seniors will get the same experimental drugs that he received.
We're going to make it available to everyone who needs it for free.
While the pandemic is a factor in polling, senior support for Trump has slipped since mid-2019. One possible reason, retirees now see him as a more extreme candidate than they did 4 years ago.
More moderate candidates tend to win higher shares of the vote. So this is true of all voters in the first place. Among seniors, this is also a more moderate portion of the electorate.
Biden also traveled to a senior center in Florida this week to court older Americans.
Because Donald Trump is simple. Not a joke. You're expendable. You're forgettable. You're virtually nobody. That's how he sees seniors. That's how he sees you.
Trump recently tweeted a photoshopped meme of his opponent in a wheelchair surrounded by seniors. The 74-year-old president often mocks Biden, who is 77, calling him Sleepy Joe.
Trump has doubled down on the idea that Joe Biden isn't functioning well anymore, simply that he is too old, implying with no evidence that he has dementia. And of course, this doesn't play very well with a senior audience.
Who's better for seniors?
Still, the Trump campaign is not giving up on seniors, launching ads targeting older voters in key battleground states this week. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnamese soldiers with heavy machinery and rescue dogs continued searching Monday for the last remaining troops buried under a mudslide after a week of deadly landslides caused by unrelenting rains. 18 bodies have been recovered. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. The spread of misinformation is all around us, and it makes the search for trustworthy news that much harder. But as Tina Trin reports, tech companies are identifying media bias and helping researchers discern the real news from the fake.
Between Google, Facebook, Twitter, and other ways Americans get their news online, many may be experiencing information overload in the run-up to Election Day. And some information isn't necessarily accurate or even true.
8 in 10 Americans are now concerned that misinformation will play a role in the outcome of the election.
But would most Americans be able to spot misinformation if they saw it?
We are expecting the news consumer to actually do the work and recognize, is this news true? Is this biased? Is it not?
That's why Harleen Kaur and her co-founders started Ground News, which claims to be the world's first news comparison platform.
So say it's a political story about elections, we'll show you how all the way from far left to far right are covering it so you can compare.
Ground News' browser extension provides this immediately for stories.
With a single click, you can then figure out what else is available. What are the other spins on the same story?
We are all biased. We're biased by everything we know, by our life experience, and everything we don't know.
John Gable is the co-founder of AllSides.com, a site that provides media bias ratings and identifies left, center, and right takes on the headlines.
We automatically bring out different points of view. So our first three results of any search you do on a news story will give you three different perspectives on that same topic.
User experience researchers like Samir Patil have found that any additional guidance can help reduce the spread of misinformation.
And this doesn't have to be very lengthy or extensive, just a short blurb that says this might be questionable or you might want to look further into it. Just that brief intervention acts as a check and reduces people's tendency or intention to share it.
Ultimately, a healthy dose of skepticism is needed.
Just at least think about, is this likely to be true? Are there factors that may make it not true? Just that brief pause and reflecting, it might be useful here.
This election season and beyond, it's one way to separate the real news from the fake news. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, as more schools in the United States welcome children back for in-person lessons, epidemiologists are warning parents to watch for COVID symptoms. Meanwhile, researchers hope to learn more about coronavirus transmission among younger children. Anoush Advetsian tells us more in this report, narrated by Anna Rice.
It's been over a month since the daughter of Alfia Husnudinova started going to school in person. While most Maryland public schools continue to teach children online, some private schools are opting for in-person learning. That prompted Husnudinova to send her daughter to a private school, where teachers get regularly tested for COVID-19. Face masks for both children and teachers are mandatory, and school desks are spaced out.
So far, everything is fine. No one has been reported sick. I hope this will serve as an example for state schools and they open for in-person learning soon.
But not everyone sees the situation this way. Epidemiologists have long warned that once children return to the classroom, the risk of contracting COVID-19 will spike. According to an independent group, the COVID Monitor, over 39,000 cases of COVID have been registered in K-12 schools in the U.S. since the start of the school year. Like 11 other states, Maryland doesn't publish detailed information about the spread of COVID-19 among school children. And no federal system tracks the virus spread in schools. So children coming back to schools for in-person classes largely remains an experiment.
Trying to keep the same cohort of children together will really be very important. That way, if somebody in the classroom is tested positive for COVID, we know that we can basically quarantine that cohort of children without having to worry too much about the other classes.
Specialists still can't say for certain whether children easily transmit COVID-19 or not. So pediatricians urge parents to keep their children at home and take a COVID test if the kid is exhibiting any symptoms.
We think that older children, probably over the age of 10, probably can transmit the virus as easily as adults can. And clearly it's going to be important to isolate older children, high schoolers, junior high schoolers, from each other if they're showing signs or symptoms of COVID. It's the young, the very young ones, you know, under 5 or 6 years old, there's much more controversy as to how communicative the virus is between one to the other.
Epidemiologists believe that school children should be tested for COVID-19 weekly, but that is not possible in a lot of schools. In Florida, most public schools opened in August, and so far over 10,000 children have been diagnosed with the coronavirus. Only private schools in two state counties still offer in-person classes. Ariana, daughter of Alexandra Schumacher-Hazen, goes to one such school.
If the kid has a small fever, they won't let him or her in. If the kid has a runny nose or a small cough, it's the same. They have imposed stricter rules here.
Other states are carefully watching Florida as they consider fully reopening all of the state schools. For Anusha Vittisyan in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
Former model and cancer survivor Mara Soto began cooking as a hobby during the pandemic. But her new pastime is yielding quite a spread, as Genia Dulo reports.
Josephine Maurer Soto, who came to the U.S. from Germany over 20 years ago, was working as a producer in the fashion industry when the coronavirus pandemic hit in mid-March. As a cancer survivor, she decided it was safest to just stay home and not venture out. Maurer Soto decided to distract herself by baking.
So this is the sourdough starter. It is equal water and equal flour that you put together and you mix it up and then you leave it over a few days. But over a few days, you would always take a little bit out and mix a little bit more equal water, equal flour. You do it for a couple of days till it builds this kind of fermentation.
Maurer Soto, who lives in Los Angeles, makes her bread with just three ingredients: flour, water, and salt. And though it might sound easy, she says there are a lot of secrets to making a tasty loaf of bread.
It really depends on where you are, you know, so your surroundings, the weather, and all this stuff is important. So I think it is about, like, being more intuitive with bread making.
At some point, Maurer Soto says her friends started asking her to bake bread for them, and that inspired her to create a micro-business, Black Forest Bakery LA. She purchased a larger stone oven and today makes about 80 loaves of bread a week, selling them for about $10 each. The business is going well, and Josephine says she has already covered all the expenses.
It's so good, and I told Josephina the story, but my mom, who's European, was staying at our house, and I had given her the bread, and immediately she said, this is European bread. This isn't the same as bread here.
I think it's the perfect in-between, a little soft, but also still crunchy. And the inside is dense and chewy. It tastes like handmade fresh bread.
Maurer Soto didn't expect to find her calling and start a business in these trying times. But she's glad she did, because fresh bread brings joy and happiness not only to her, but to the many people who love the taste. Genia Dulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Be sure to follow us online. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank those who help bring you this program, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.